I just want to take a few moments for Thilo, for myself, for you listening or watching to this video, to this audio, to just tune in the situation we are in, because we are all in a big, huge transition period. Our planet is in it, all beings are in it. And I want to invite you to just take a moment to connect with your situation, with your body, with your life circumstances. And dear Thilo, I want to warmly welcome you to the Conscious Evolution Summit.
Yeah, welcome to everybody here.
And I know that you are like all of us in circumstances and in life situations which are not easy, where you try to combine your or let's say balance your personal life, your private life, your family life, your professional life as a professor for applied science of consciousness in Germany. And I'm so much looking forward to explore with you what you explore in your research in university and also in your personal life, what supports us in this challenging time of change we are all in. And I want to admit that we are all in the same situation. Yeah.
Maybe that's the reason why I have actually developed this model of transrational skills, which I think they are very important for all of us. Because I realized that we are at the moment in a situation, maybe due to the huge connectedness we experience with all the social media, with internet, with the development, which is rapidly growing. And therefore, I realized that there is an essence of human qualities of being which are just not or no longer relevant, or seem to be no longer relevant in the society from the outside. But for being healthy, or for maintaining our bodily and also psychological health, we absolutely need some qualities which are life supporting. And I realized that because I'm in a very close contact to a psychosomatic clinic, and the number of psychosomatic diseases like depression, stress disorders is tremendously growing nowadays. And we have to think, what is the reason for it? And I think it's very, very obvious, because people are just overloaded with so much information, with demands they cannot deal with. So there is a kind of a steady deficit in which we are living, because the demands are always faster and more intense than we can actually handle them.
Yeah,
so that's my basic approach. Mm-hmm. Why I had to think about all this.
Yeah. I totally agree, and I guess that almost everyone who is listening and watching to us now can can find that what you shared in them, their personal life as well. So I'm very curious what you explored and what you found out about this trans rational capacities, you said? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, in a way, when we do and we are in service, when we are there for our partners, for our kids, for our colleagues, for our work, I guess a lot we are more coming, or we have the tendency or the habit to really bring our personality and our knowledge and our expertises. But I have the sense that what is really important is to kind of connect with deeper qualities in ourself, where we are, let's say, also more connected to a kind of a source which gives us vitality and also energy, where, because of all what you said, is kind of pulling us and pushing us and demanding, we easily deplete, because also burnout is also a topic also for people which are very much engaged, also which who would call themselves maybe change agents or looking for working in social justice and making this world a better place. So it's also when you do what you love to do, you can also, if you are not really anchored and rooted in qualities which are deeper, it can end up in a burnout. So I'm curious to listen to what you explored, what supports us in going through this challenging and intense and demanding times we are in.
Yeah, with burnout, it's this is very special. I experienced in the clinic for private insurance patients, there are about 40% of the whole population of the patients are teachers. Oh. And teachers, they are really, so it's a social, very social profession, and they are, as you said, very often highly engaged, but that's not the point for being healthy. It's more the question, does my engagement really fit with the conditions we approach? So we have we live in conditions in which we just cannot compete with the demands. So we cannot fulfill what actually is in our highly idealistic way of living, and that is what many people then drives into kind of burnout. So this is again a kind of a deficit in fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is already almost the key point. I'm just now thinking whether I should probably shortly introduce a model of consciousness in which I'm thinking, so maybe then everything becomes a bit more obvious.
Please, yeah, please share. Take us in your worldview, in your universe.
Because when we look at what is consciousness, the whole conference is about evolution of consciousness, also conscious evolution. And consciousness is quite or has evolved from a state of pure being to a kind of consciousness which involves many, many functions which we need for our daily life, for actually dealing with our demands. And these functions are, let's say, due to the ability also of our brain to reconstruct the outer world. So what actually consciousness is, I would say, it's the representation of a world, of any world. It can be a world of in our dreams. It can be a world which we experience in the outside world, in the physical world. And consciousness is just the representation of such a world. And in our daily life, through our senses, our brain reproduces the external world and creates an inner experience on this. But the important point is that we are not conscious of the world outside. We are conscious of our inner representation. And this is a construction. And so there is a huge amount of construction because the amount of information which actually arrives in us or is filtered and is reduced to very few or to only a very essence of what we actually could experience. And then the inner world is created due to our conceptions we live in, to well organized and automized processes, all our prejudgments and whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And this is actually the problem we have. We have to deal with our internal representations, and we have to take care of them.
But in a way, it's also good news, because at least for me, it also implies that we are responsible for our inner world, and we can adjust and we can change when we take care of our inner world.
Yes, this empowers us, actually. Yeah. Yeah, because we are the creators, actually, and we should take this responsibility to create this inner space. Mm-hmm. But to get back to the to this representation of the physical outer world, this makes absolutely sense that what we experience, remodels all physical functions even. So I sometimes call it, we have a kind of a virtual reality simulator in us, which actually simulates the laws of physics, of real classical physics. And when we, so originally I'm a physicist, and therefore it's so important to know that what we experience in the outer world is essentially classical physics. There is some optics, electrodynamics, not so much, but the classical mechanical physics. And therefore, when we see a ball approaching, then we actually reconstruct the trajectory in order to catch it. And this is a very precise reconstruction process, unconscious process, which we actually become conscious of afterwards. So what the brain is doing is simulating physics, and physics is a rational science, actually. So the laws of mechanics are causal, of causal nature, causality. The principle of cause and effect is the is a very basic principle, and what we use then for for reconstructing this world is we build up categories and concepts, and even feelings become concepts in us. So all our reflections, recognition, knowledge is knowledge of concepts, of feelings. Their whole embodiment gets on a certain level conceptualized, and these concepts are then associated, combined, and linked with each other, and built up a rational, logical system. And very much in our life is logical.
And in a way, when I listen to you, I get always the image like a inner structure of a building. It has a certain stabilities, it has proportions, it has rules. And in a way, I can also sense that it also gives a feeling of, I know that, I feel secure there, it's familiar to me. So it seems to give us a safety also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is, and it is essential to construct the world in this way, because it enables us to handle it, to survive, to be creative in it, actually. So for creativity, kind of a structure is essential. But on the other hand, the structure has to be, or should be also or should be able to dissolve the structure in order to make it flexible. So, and here we have the first complementarity between two terms, which I call structure and dynamics. And these forms of complementary concepts, they are in our thinking very widely present without knowing that we actually have them, or they build up our system. So we know these forms of complementarity from quantum physics, actually. There's the term complementarity is a basic term in quantum mechanics. So we have variables, complementary variables like energy and time, or position and momentum. So this builds up also the complementary view of particle and waves. And so these terms are in the same or in a similar way complementary. And now we can think of what are the properties of complementary concepts. And one concept or one property is actually that structure is something which exists in a world of separation. And dynamics is the force which actually links the structures. So this is the complementary of connectedness versus individuality. That's another complementary term. So we are individuals, and we can define ourselves even as our individual properties. So let's say you are a woman, I'm a man. this defines us.
And the interesting thing, Thilo, is when you brought in just the world and the quality of dynamics, and I was still connected to structure, but I felt my system and myself really expanding with bringing in dynamics. And I also, what I got is also, they need each other in a way.
Exactly.
Dynamics need structure. Structure needs dynamics. They can't mm-hmm. exist in a way without each other. And if when I'm able to be okay with both, to relate to both, I feel immediately I expand, I grow, and in a way I feel whole.
And now comes the important thing that in a world that is highly dynamic, and this is what we experience, there is a huge desire for structure. And that's why we have the movement for conservative, or the conservative movements. People are more focused on borders now again. So we want to preserve borders. We want to separate things again. Because the dynamics, threatens the structure or, yeah.
Yeah, and in a way, old structure are collapsing, so and new structures are not really there, yeah. So we are a bit lost in space and a lot of dynamics.
Yeah, and this is this causes actually fear and anxiety, because we feel unsafe in this highly dynamic thing, and safety is a basic need. So it's the what a child needs, the safety for the presence of the mother. And when we don't have, or when we cannot develop this safety, this basic safety experience of being safe, this causes a lot of the psychosomatic diseases in the life of people. And so the question is, what is now our attitude we can bring into life which has a high demand for structures, for perfection, for these kind of also in law,
a lot of complexity.
Yeah, and a lot of complexity, which threatens it. And there is then, and what I experienced then is that there is a complement for this uncertainty. Or let's say in other terms, uncertainty is the source actually for dealing with a loss of structures and dynamics. So we have to accept that the world is uncertain. And what we need for it is faith. And faith is actually the quality where we can just, handle uncertainty. And what comes from as a consequence, as a skill, we develop a kind of the uncertainty and the acceptance for uncertainties. And this is what we need.
That's really wonderful, Thilo, because what I see a lot that we try to create certainty or safety, but what I get when I listen to you, when I connect to faith, it's like a bigger space which can be there for uncertainty. It's like I got the image that there is a threatened child and the faith is the parent which is there. So often we bring a lot of energy and emphasis into building up security. But when I listen to you and when I tune into it, it totally makes sense that it's much more important to connect to the quality of faith, because it can hold it and it can accept it, and it says, yeah, it's difficult for you. Yes, you would like to have more safety, and I'm there for you. Kind of, it's an interesting quality.
Mm-hmm. And what we have to see is that actually security and perfection and all those values, they are illusionary, because they cannot be fulfilled in a complex world. They can only fulfilled in a small part of the world. But as we have to see that we are all interconnected in some way, or the interconnections are bigger than we can actually handle, then security, perfection are really illusionally values.
And very limited. I feel it very limited.
Yeah. And we lose any degree of freedom the more we concentrate on those rational values, the more we lose degrees of freedom to actually to work to
and to I also get to become, to adjust, to change.
Mm-hmm. And now there is a kind of an uncertainty principle, like in quantum physics, to the complementary variable. This is one part that each complementary variable has a kind of an uncertainty relation, which means the more I know about one variable, the less or the more unsharp the other one gets. And for the concept of security, this means the more I focus on security, the more inflexible I get, and faith is not existing anymore and is not required. And on the other hand, we can see that as soon as we give faith into a situation and we trust in the uncertainty, in the process of not knowing, the more we gain freedom and are independent of being secure or insecure, that is not relevant anymore. And it's also important to know that faith only exists due to our value of being safe. So if we would not have this value, faith and would not exist as a quality, and therefore they both belong together, but they are not the same. And the more faith we have, the more flexible we get in accepting secure situations, but also very insecure situations. And this enables us or gives us a huge freedom to act. And we can do that with perfection in the same way. The opposite of perfection would be, probably being imperfect,
chaotic.
Randomness, chaotic, And as soon as we develop a quality of tolerance of imperfection, or an error tolerance, or I don't call it tolerance, more friendliness. The error friendliness is the quality which enables us to deal in a creative way with any kind of imperfection or perfection. So we are independent, more independent of that. And every failure that occurs is just a new tool for being creative in creating something maybe more perfect.
I just love this term friendly, because it's so much more human than tolerant. You know, just be friendly to myself. Mm-hmm. If I see, oh, the quality wasn't, I like to have it, or towards others, it's so much more human. And when I tune in to be friendly to myself, to you, to others, oh, great, it feels good.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a kind of a quality which comes with all these transrational skills, that we create a kind of or we experience a kind of happiness, friendliness, of calmness, of quietness, but also intuition and creativity are impulses that come with that. At the same way, it's important that we don't see the transrational aspects as those which just compensate all our errors or all our failures. They are not due to compensate the failures. They are more qualities which should allow for being creative with them. Yeah, and accept them. And now we come to the to what can we do, or what is the inner attitude for it? And I think the term mindfulness is one approach towards an inner state. When we are mindful, or mindfulness actually consists of being present in the moment and don't judge what we have. So we accept the present moment as it is. And this is a precondition, actually, for developing transrational skills.
Is this the only one, or are there some more preconditions?
No, there are actually some more. I will come to them. But first of all, I would shortly stay on this mindfulness concept, because the concept of mindfulness is, when we think back to my model of consciousness, it's allows us to actually stop the well-automized conceptualizations we are doing all the time. And we are creating rational, logical concepts. And when we abstain from creating those concepts, then we reach this state of mindfulness. That means, for example, being present means I don't create time. Time is a kind of an artifact of our human thinking. So the linear scale of time does not exist outside the world. So I actually ask myself whether it's even makes sense to treat time as a basic, as a fundamental constant in physics. I think it is not. the fundamental concept in physics is the operator of time, the principle of change.
Mm-hmm.
So d of the dt for the mathematicians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is this constant change. This is what we can experience in the present now. But we don't have future, and we don't have the past when we are mindful. So we just abstain from creating time. This is one aspect. The other aspect of mindfulness is the acceptance. And acceptance means we abstain from our evaluations, from judgments we do. And judging a situation is an artificial process which comes quite after the pure experience of a situation. And they are often interlinked with each other very closely, but we often don't think about that. But in a mindful state, we just are able not to do these evaluations. And so mindfulness is a kind of an abstain from well-automized functions of consciousness. So it is not a higher state, it is more something getting back to the roots. And this is important in order to get degrees of freedom, because our freedom arises from inner states or also brain states of uncertainty. And the more concept the more concepts and rational thinking we create, the more determined are our ways of thinking. And so in our daily life, we are very often hyper-determined, feel absolutely driven by stimuli that approach to us all the time. And the forces of life, actually, the joy and satisfaction can only appears when feeling this freedom. So there is an interesting interlink, and this is what we experience in meditation. In a deep form of meditation, we just abstain from all these determinations, get in a state of uncertainty, of quietness. Quietness is the most uncertain state we can experience. And this is at the same time, the most vivid and the most vital source we can have. Because vitality actually is the potentiality, is the pure potentiality of life. It is not determined what we do, and that makes us human. So our human qualities arise from being uncertain.
I just want to let sink that in, because it's so profound. And also, there you also have this complementary of quietness, of nothing, and then on the other side, potentiality and vitality. So
mm-hmm.
how they are interlinked with each other. Yeah. And when I go to this point, I mean, I love it. We are now just in the midst of the topic where I love to explore so much, because it feels for me, it feels when we go there, it's the source of everything. It's the source of everything. Everything what we can experience and what we can see then in the material world comes from this place where nothingness and potentiality meet and let them grow and birth something. Mm-hmm. So I'm mm-hmm. very excited. I can't hide my excitement.
Maybe we can go to another category. And this is the category of empathy. Mm. So, because that comes comes in my mind. I mean, looking at you, so and talking about what makes us human. So, when we would, or when we are in contact with somebody, and this person. Has a lot of concepts and a very rational way of being, then this is almost like a robot. It's very mechanistic, people are. And the question is, but what is the human quality in people? And there again we see that as soon as we cannot predict them, but on the same time we feel a deep I again use the word faith into them, then there comes something human, or we feel as being connected. You can do that with animals as well, much better.
the word yeah. Sameness came when I relate to that. I connect with the sameness in everyone. Gender, it's beyond nationality, it's beyond of education, it's just the sameness in us which makes us mm-hmm. alive beings.
And once I created the term trans-empathic state, which I think is very important for therapists, because normally when we use the term empathy, we think of when we tune into somebody else, we experience the state of another person in ourselves. And then we know the person. And then what therapists often do, they judge about them. So any diagnosis is a kind of a judgment, and it limits the personality. But what is really needed is, and therefore I use the term, not the empathic quality in which I just copy the person's state, is the trans-empathic quality, which means I try to to tune into the potentiality of the other person, the unknown qualities of what another person could be or can be. What are the hidden seeds which can grow in another person? And when we are able to see other people with this perspective, that they are a huge sea of creative impulses which we all are not aware of, then something wonderful can happen in the other person. And I think healing has to do with that. Mm-hmm. Healing has to do with seeing the other person in as a potentiality, as the most creative form of mm-hmm. what could be.
In a way, what I also, or it's just maybe another way of expressing it, but when you just first talked about empathy, what you described is when one personality and one conditioned self relates to another personality and conditioned self. And what I get when you speak about trans empathy is where I myself, I guess that when I wanna give that to someone else, I need to be connected to what I am beyond my conditioning and my personality and my structure, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I need to be in this freedom, in this expansion, in this creativity, in this expanded state. And then I can relate to someone else who is also that, not just the scene, not just the structure, not just his behavior or his worldview. The other person is also much more beyond what our senses can grasp. So in a way, both of us need to expand beyond the graspable and beyond the familiar and beyond the secure in a way.
And that makes us human, being able to see this being more than that. And that is like in quantum physics, the wave function stands for this huge amount of potentiality. It's a kind of an infinite dimensional space.
Yeah, and then because you also refer to healing, then you enter a realm where not just cause and effect in a linear way is happening, but there you enter. I mean, you are the expert in this field in quantum physics, but you then enter a realm where potentiality is there, which can awake possibilities which wouldn't be there just in cause and effect.
Yeah. Because you allow the client to be other, someone else than at the moment, than we would experience or we feel in the moment.
Yeah.
We have to permit the other, any other person we meet, we have to permit people being different to what they are or what they seem to be at the moment. Always to be different. And that makes people dynamic and allows and gives them degrees of freedom. So we are not the state in which we are. States are static. We are dynamic. People, which means we can be very different. And so different that we cannot, we even cannot estimate or think of that things or states of being can actually arise in us.
And what I also get when I listen to you is, how would it look like if you would relate to children like that, really connecting to what they bring, what they are, what potential they have, and give them the freedom and the space to explore it, to play in it, to make mistakes, fall down, get up again, try, experiment, you know?
Yeah, and that we can accept that that they do it, and therefore, and I think what school actually does is, it teaches us mainly in the rational competences, our rational competences. Okay, then there are soft skills. It's a term which we deal with our interconnectedness, with our social interactions. But what we actually would need is an emphasis on these transrational skills as well in school. Because what I realized is that these problems which we have with teachers, burnout, for example, this is something we find in children in a very similar way. And the school system is actually built up on judgments, on right, correct and false. These are the categories in which, and to each question there is a correct answer. And if we don't provide the correct answer, we get degraded. And this is actually a kind of thinking which is trained in people over many years in young children. And when they now leave school, they get into life situations which actually are or cannot be handled with this kind of thinking.
So there your transrational capacities come really into play.
Mm-hmm. Where we need
to kind of
develop
them more.
Yeah, and nowadays young people are challenged more than in the past ages, I would say. Because due to this fast developments and interactions, they have no reference anymore of the elder people, because they have to, the young people have to reinvent their lives and their coping strategies with the situations. And what we could probably do is helping them to cope with their situations by propagating also these transrational skills, because they are essential, and the concepts which are taught in the rational system, they can only partly partly handle the problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have more examples of those transrational qualities?
Yeah, once I had I have once listed about 20. One which is very close to this correctness actually comes from our system of justice and the transrational skill we need is the skill for forgiveness. And I think this is for me a very, very important thing, because guilt or dealing with guilt is not just about going into prison or paying money or doing anything. This is not the this can be one way to deal with it. But on the other hand, in social life, in everyday life, we have to be able to say, I'm sorry. this makes us human. This is a human quality. And this is something which I realize that as the churches or the religion, the Christian tradition loses its influence more and more, there is no institution anymore which actually holds up the value of forgiveness. And this is something that in my eyes has to be preserved, the quality of forgiveness.
Yeah, and I get it as well towards ourselves inside and towards others.
Yeah.
Both
yeah,
directions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when you talk about, you said about in ourselves there is another aspect or the another demand or rational demand is the demand for approval. We want to, everybody wants to be seen and acknowledged in a certain way. And this is something very extrinsic and popular. And very often we don't get that approval in the way we actually would need it. Because everybody or many people are just self-oriented in this very highly efficient time we are. Everybody wants to self-optimize themselves. And what we actually need is a kind of form of self-acceptance.
And or to give it even further, a self-love.
Yeah, self-love is even better.
And what I get more and more when I listen to you and when I tune in our conversation is, in a way, that what is needed and what supports us is bringing really our awareness inside of us, in the invisible, in the unseen, in kind of nourishing us there, in order to that we are able to act outside in the world. I feel we need to be really rooted in our essence in order to give out and be out there. So I get this both directions, because we are kind of, the world calls us, do something, act, engage, but in a way we really need to be very much in ourselves and give us this acceptance, this self-love, this faith, you said, then also being connected to what we are beyond our concepts and our personality. And you said what comes into my mind is also this, you talked about mindfulness supporting us in that. But you also kind of, you didn't share, but you mentioned that there are some more prerequisites needed in order to make this kind of self-care process, I would say.
That's true. I wanted to get back to that. First of all, I want to summarize that these transrational mindsets, or the transrational mindset which I propagate here, that is with I just tell you the terms or repeat the terms. This is faith, confidence, benevolence, self-acceptance, satisfaction, serenity, appreciation, sympathy, also empathy, transrational empathy, connectedness, and maybe kindness and insight as well. And when we look at those qualities, We find them in all spiritual traditions as most important, or as the focus of development, of the conscious evolution. And that's very interesting, that not the rational skills are the essence, or build up the essence, or the essential qualities of spiritual mindset. No, these are the transrational skills. They build up the spiritual mindset. And this mindset is an inner attitude. And to each of these inner inner concepts, we can associate a skill, a competence, which we can use for acting outside. For example, the inner attitude of faith gives us the possibility for showing uncertainty tolerance. Or the self-acceptance makes us independent of external appreciation. Or serenity, as an inner quality, gives us humor, or a sense of humor, and dealing also with situations with humor. And now the question, how can we actually train them or develop them? First of all, I have already said that I think what's important is an insight into uncertainty of life, which means, in a wider sense, a knowledge about the incompleteness of everything we perceive. I think this is a basic element. We have to be aware that everything, all informations we have, are fractals, fragments with a huge amount of hidden connections. And this makes us also humble, in a way. Yeah, I think this humbleness is an important attitude to build up that. Because we don't know everything about, and we are not the real, or we cannot create the world as we want it to be. We have some influence, but we have to be aware of our limitedness. And then another important insight is a skill which we need is to change perspective. We should be able to view ourselves not only with our main perspective, or how should I say it? Use the word in English.
Our familiar conditioning.
Familiar conditioning. But be able to take various perspectives on ourselves and on other situations as well. This can be done by, or we have to deconstruct actually our functions of perspective, of viewing things. And then build up a new side. Mm-hmm. So this enables us to shift the paradigms as well, in which we view the world. And we also might come to the to the conclusion that the rational and logical thoughts and conclusions we draw for dealing with situations might not be the best ones.
Or at least not the only ones.
And not the only ones, yeah. But actually, there are situations in life where you might think, with all of my informations I have, I can draw a rational conclusion on something or decision, make a decision, and the decision is wrong. Because of my limited knowledge, probably, but also because there is so much uncertainty in the system that it might be wrong.
What I just also get when I listen to you, Thilo, is that in a way what is needed in order to develop that and in order to make this shift of where we put our focus, we need to make again and again breaks and spaces in our habits, in our doing, in our busy lives, in order to really, it's a learning process, it's a training to bring this more into our lives.
Yeah, we need freedom in our mind states, I would call it. And this requires times in which there is no demand, no goal, so no intention. And these are spaces in which we should preserve and which we should cultivate. Mm-hmm. So we have to cultivate spaces, free spaces in the life.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thilo, we are coming to our end of our conversation. And I just want to give you the opportunity, if you have something you want to use this time together and share something with the audience to kind of, come to an end of our time together. If something comes to your mind, otherwise I have an idea what I would love to have, but can be something from you first.
No, I'm curious about your idea.
I would really love to end our conversation because with you sharing again just those words of those transrational qualities you did before, because what I experienced when you spoke them, they landed in my heart. Each word landed in my heart. It didn't land in my mind, it landed in my heart. And what I also felt, there was this, finally, I feel when those words, I feel as a human, I feel recognized in my humanness. I feel nourished in my humanness. It feels finally someone speaks to them, and names them. And for me, it's kind of a nourishment when I just listen to them and when I let enter them in my heart. It feels good. It's a nourishment. I would just, if you have a resonance with it, and just take a moment where we sit, and maybe some of us would like to close the eyes and just let the qualities, because it's not just words. When you name them, I feel the essence, the frequency of those qualities. And I really feel that we need them, and we need to value them, and we need to cultivate them more in our lives.
Yeah, I may just repeat these qualities in detail. And before I do this, I would encourage all people to look in their daily life for their demands, for their rational demands. They are coming extrinsically from outside to them. And then look what might be the transrational quality they need in order to regain freedom in this demand. I might repeat the transrational skills and start with the uncertainty tolerance, which is the complement of safety and security. The second is independence of appreciation, which complements the needs for respect and appreciation we are asking for. The third is a kind of frugal pleasure that complements the greed for profit and wealth. It is also the quality to enjoy the life, enjoy what we have independently from what we want to have or think we might need for being happy. The next is the ability for caring, or the virtue of serving. And the error friendliness as a complement for the demand of perfection. Mercy and the readiness to forgive complements the legal correctness which is demanded. And the calmness complements the dynamics of our information exchange, the density of information exchange requires an inner silence. The relativation of demands is the last one, because everybody wants to be, or wants us to be, competent. And being competent is one of the key demands when we want to get a job. And we have to know that we shouldn't be, or we don't have to be, competent in all our needs. We can see our interdependencies and see how we are connected to each other, and then we only have to be competent in some parts, in what is our quality. This is our contribution, and that means the relativization of demands. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you so much, Thilo, for bringing all your wisdom, all your knowledge, your presence, your full heart into our conversation.
Thank you for inviting me. It was really a pleasure.
Yeah. And to all of you out there in this big world, I hope you enjoyed our conversation. And I wish you all the best to implement it, to cultivate it, and to live with this world in transition we are. And I hope to see you again. Bye.